Welcome to the Market Access Radar, a podcast brought to you by Certara, the global leader in model-informed decision-making from molecule to market. In every podcast, we'll take a critical look at impactful news and trends in the biopharma industry. We will take you on board our journey from bench to bedside and hear from experts and guest speakers on the monumental transformation in healthcare,
the move from paying for volume to awarding value.
We are back for our first episode of 2021 after quite a bit of hiatus. I'm here with Ulrich Neumann, Senior Director of U.S. Access Strategy and Veteran Policy Observer here at Certara. I'm Max Goldstein. And our first episode is going to be about discussing the health policy agenda of the new administration and our outlook for the 117th Congress. So Ulrich, we're about 2 weeks now into the new administration. President Biden has issued executive orders, I think more than 24, so including a few that have strengthened the Affordable Care Act. Do we know what's on his priority list when it comes to healthcare?
Yeah, well, thanks, Max, for having me. And yes, you mentioned the EOs. You know, I think they're indeed highlighting some of the cornerstones of what you're going to expect from the Biden agenda. So namely, there's a core focus, as you said, on expanding the ACA. Take that signed order, for instance, which is directing HHS to establish a 3-month-long special enrollment period for the federal marketplace, which, you know, as many of our listeners know, most of the states have already done on their own platform, on their state marketplaces. And the goal of an executive order like that is to handle the influx of unemployment related to corona and lower, uninsurance, which is really one of the cornerstones of his policy. He also called for the elimination of any other policies that have, quote unquote, undermined patient protections or reduced coverage. Essentially, you know, we called it ACA 2.0, set of course corrections on the regulatory side. That has begun with a freeze that was announced by the White House Chief of Staff, Ron Klein, in a note saying that any rules or any agency action that did not take effect prior to January 20th will be automatically reassessed by the new administration.
So I assume that's interesting. So does that mean that, you know, some of the recent drug policy executive orders that now former President Trump signed, are those out the window? You know, I think we noted at the time they were maybe more symbolic in nature, but, you know, they had the CMS rebate rule or the so-called most favored nation policy. Is that basically gone?
Yes, it's a good question. They're not entirely gone, but they're definitely not going to go into effect anytime soon. And maybe let's disentangle these two key policies that you mentioned there here, because, you know, there weren't just declarations of intent of rulemaking. There were actually formalized CMS rules, but they're both delayed due to court cases. So if we start with the rebate rule for Medicare Part D, that one was scheduled to go into effect January next year, when HHS would essentially eliminate the protections that are currently allowing PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, to pass along Part D rebates to insurers. And the rule would then exclude safe harbor protections under the anti-kickback statute for rebates paid by the drug manufacturers to PBM and instead create new safe harbor protections for those rebates to be passed on directly to the consumer. So that essentially was the previous administration's attempt at bursting some of that gross to net bubble. Essentially, if you remember, they had also wanted to eliminate Medicaid managed care rebates. But the CBO, which is the Congressional Budget Office, indicated that it would likely cost the government $177 billion over the next years. So it's a net negative. And so the final rule then only focused on the Part D rebates. However, there's never been an assessment that was made on the budget impact of the final rule. And importantly, it's this question about what's the level of premiums. Just to explain that, it is significant because the in-house actuaries at HHS had actually estimated that the initial rule would have increased premiums in Medicare for all seniors by 25%. Which then, you know, lends support to the notion that those PBM rebates that they try to eliminate actually do hold down premiums. So there was a host of other questions that plan sponsors would have wanted to model out, and the timing was already extremely tight here because bids for the next, you know, benefit years is 2022 are essentially due in June. So now on the substance, that is all potentially still on the table. But to cut it short, at least with a delay, I said there's a court case. It was brought by the PBM lobby. And the Biden administration has now effectively agreed to two things. One, they're going to postpone the rule effective date, which is going to be in 2023 now. So January 1st, 2023. And B, they'll tell the court by April 1st this year how they will proceed and how they may defend this, because it's a holdover case from the previous administration. There are procedural questions on the litigation, we should note, as to how the rule was proposed and whether the process itself was proper. So we don't know the future on that, but just speaking with colleagues, you know, our take is that it's not likely the Biden administration will spend major effort rescuing a Trump-era proposal, especially if the rulemaking process itself may be subject to prolonged litigation.
So maybe a sigh of relief from Express Scripts and probably a few other PBMs as well. What about the most favored nation rule?
Right. So if you will, this is probably where the developers and many of the providers sigh with relief. As you said, there were also court challenges that then led to nationwide injunctions. Mm-hmm. Based mainly on procedural grounds, again, CMS had skipped that proper notice and comment period that would have been mandated. You know, and one of the judges said the plaintiffs would be virtually certain, quote, virtually certain to prevail because CMS had not followed these basic requirements of the Administrative Procedures Act. So a couple of days ago, the official comment period on that rule ended. Again, pointing to a bit of an absurd process because the rule should have already gone into effect in January, had it gone into effect at the beginning of this year. If you look at the stakeholder comments, there are thousands of them. It is a resounding no thanks. And the reason is, in essence, it's being described as not just a sloppy approach to essentially policymaking, that's the procedural part, but also a half-baked concept that potentially could do more harm than good. So what that model would have done is it would have been implemented under CMMI, which is the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. It's almost like a testing center for novel payment models, but as a national model, mandatory for everyone. And it would have targeted 50 high-cost drugs in Medicare Part B. So essentially, it surfaced as the IPI model, which we did a last podcast on back in 2018. And, you know, we dissected that in a lot of detail. But the notion, you know, was here that reimbursement for these drugs would be tied to an ex-US price, namely the price that was the lowest that was paid, adjusted for GDP, in any OECD country that had at least 60% of the US GDP per capita. So it's a reference pricing to an external price. And CMS expected that if that were to be done, then you would save on average about 65% of the drug price. And then at the end, they would just lever a fee on top of that. Now, why is it so disruptive? Well, especially among providers, there was an outcry because the MFN here didn't actually lowered drug prices directly, right? But it lowered the payment that providers would get. So whether or not the dynamics was actually unfold so that the prices then would come down, that was not easily answered. In fact, when you look at it, CMS said that patients may have to travel a bit further, or, you know, they even modeled out that the drug utilization in Part B was going to go down due to this rule by 9% this year. And due to this lack of negotiation between manufacturers and providers, that it would continue to increase 19%, even in the third year, and then stay constant. So essentially what we're seeing there is that every fifth senior would essentially be off the meds they would have otherwise had access to. So it's not just pharma, but many, many stakeholders, that found pretty harsh words for this. So the rule is final again, but, you know, it has a lot of uncertainty in there because it's in the courts, and sure that you can expect that the new administration would essentially endorse the principle of lowering drug prices. But it's very questionable whether they will defend this one in court or simply withdraw it, which I believe is much more likely. But that doesn't mean that they won't come back with a similar rule in a more robust fashion, just because this one really stands on fairly weak legal legs, even if CMS, under Biden would support it.
Hi there, and thanks for listening to this podcast. If you would like to hear more about some of the trends discussed today, please send our experts a quick note. You'll find their email address in the show notes wherever you have downloaded the program. Our mission here at Certara Evidence and Access is to bridge complex data science and modeling to real-world impact and payer strategy. 96% of all approved FDA products have used Certara software and services in 2018. But it may be what happens in the real world that will shape the ultimate reason why our teams around the world are so invested in their work. That is to get patients the appropriate and affordable access to the innovation and cures we've spent years developing. So thanks again for joining us in this effort and spending part of your day with us. Now let's get back to part two of today's program.
So Ulrich, let's shift gears a little bit, because I know I mentioned in my intro we talk a little bit about Congress and really the new climate on the Hill with the Democratic majorities in both houses. What does that entail for pharma?
Right. So, I mean, we first, should make clear that the focus, whether it's on Capitol Hill or the White House, is on COVID, right? That is and will be the dominating healthcare topic for the foreseeable future, at least the next 6 months. But we shouldn't underestimate also that, pharma is bringing in this COVID debate, multiple vaccines to market, therapeutics, which, is certainly buying some goodwill. And if you want, maybe some reprieve when it comes to potentially adverse legislation, you can and maybe want to think about what, pricing those vaccines essentially as a cost plus break even might do to the long term impact on how what developers are, pricing drugs at, how that's being perceived. But, no question is certainly, calming down the, if you will, bad pharma momentum for the moment. Second of all, there is some pent up demand for legislation. And mainly, it's the undoing of the Trump era, right? It's course correction from the Democratic side, where they, want to look at immigration, taxes, other domains. So you really have some competing priorities among the majority at this point.
One thing I think that COVID's done here is, it brings to light the understanding of how pharmaceutical interventions and vaccines can, delay certain outcomes, reduce hospital stay. I mean, these are things we talk about all the time. These are things that are being brought to national attention and the national conversation. It'll be interesting to see how that, manifests moving forward, not just in COVID, but, how people talk about pharmaceutical intervention overall.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We'll change the debate on that. But, what I would also say is that, when you're looking at this new Congress, you really have to understand that it's a slim majority, and the breaking vote is the VP, right? I mean, Kamala Harris, is the tying vote. So if you put this all together, all over, when you think of the legislation we talked, about transformative things like public option or fringe expectation, so, let the government negotiate drug pricing. Most of us agree that it'll be off the table for the time being. However, and I want to make this point where I slightly disagree with what is probably that conventional wisdom right now among policy hawks. I don't think that piece will be forever, right? Because 2022 politics will kick in soon. And, the notion that you have progressives who've helped Joe Biden into the presidency, many of whom will have to defend their seats every 2 years. So they'll defend their seats in the House, and that they're just going to lose up on one of their signature demands, which is to curb drug pricing. That's quite unlikely. So what does that mean? Well, the question then becomes, how costly is some of that legislation, that could pass if all the Dems united? What would be the cost for senators like Joe Manchin in West Virginia if he chose to side with the progressives? So if you're streamlining your public affairs budget right now, what you might want to spend it on is literally polling in Putnam County in West Virginia or places like Arizona, to get a feeling how, say, Medicare reform or drug pricing legislation flies with those voters. Because if there's no reason to expect that Republican opposition can be mounted here in these places, then you can be sure that the moderate senators have little incentive to stand in the way if there's a Democratic push for such legislation, not least because they're also going to face, their primary challenge on the Dem side. you've got to ask yourself if President Trump has already proposed reference pricing. We talked about most favored nations just now. He's publicly shamed pharma companies, right? It's hard to imagine a Republican resistance in these places.
You know, you mentioned, you know, a little bit of the role of the GOP in the Senate, given that the Democrats, you know, do have a majority that is so slim, Vice President Harris being the tiebreaker. Is there any other roles we can think of the GOP in the Senate as it pertains to this topic?
I have to say this, frankly, with the result of the Georgia Senate races, the Republicans are really out of the picture, right? I mean, you really have to expect that all efforts are going to be whatever works with the Democratic majority for the next 2 years. So, you know, there's a process called reconciliation, and, you know, it's been referenced a lot recently. Basically allows you to pass anything that has a budgetary component with 51 votes. Dems have that. So you can't, you know, necessarily pass a bill that's, let's say, focused on purely on benefit redesign, unless you find 10 Republicans who would join. But you can pass major legislation. You know, let's not forget the ACA was passed through reconciliation, right? And so was tax reform later. So no, you have a lot of power, which is 50 senators. You know, and the other thing is that's important when you think about the GOP's role, the lack there, you know, lack of its power right now, is that you control which topics are brought to the floor in the committees. You know, what we often do is we listen to some of the key figures. So if you do that, think about someone like Ron Wyden. He's the chairman of the Senate's Finance Committee. He was, that was Chuck Grassley before, but he was the ranking member before. But, you know, because of the change, he's now the chairman of that committee, who authored with Grassley this famous Senate's Finance bill on Medicare reform. And, you know, Wyden has already said he wants those proposals back on the agenda. The only reason that didn't get, voted on or ever actually reach was because of Mitch McConnell, who didn't want to take it up on the main floor in the Senate. You know, you can obviously look at, you know, what's the composition of the committee. But if you look at, there's a GOP senator called Mike Crapo from Indiana. He is widely seen as a lot less, I would say, antagonistic as Grassley might have been toward a pharma industry. He had actually voted against some of the bills that Grassley advanced. One of them, you know, was, you know, the levy for penalties for, you know, drug price above inflation. But just to that earlier point, just to drive that home, Wyden doesn't need Crapo, right? I mean, he doesn't need him to advance any bill out of the committee and indeed onto the floor, because that's all in the hands of Schumer and the Democrats. You know, lastly, whatever it's worth, if you get the impulse from the White House on this, you know, you heard Biden on the campaign trail talk about therapeutic reference pricing like Germany. I wouldn't be surprised if there's even some, you know, look at cost-effective evaluations to emerge, which might, you know, just feature in House proposals, but it may well be that there's real policy change. My view is it's going to be a pretty dynamic period for market access decision makers next 2 years.
Definitely interesting to see, and we'll definitely be on the forefront of that, commenting along the way. So I think that's all the time we got in our policy update and the legislative landscape that's going on in Washington. Before we sign off today, give me a few takeaways from today for our Radar listeners.
All right, so there's basically three here, right? Rebate rule for Medicare Part D has been delayed to January 2023, and we'll hear over the next 3 months how the administration will defend it, or even whether they'll defend it at all. Number two, other big item, the most favored nation model faces a pretty uncertain future, even more uncertain, partly because of those procedural flaws that I mentioned, questionable legal mandate, and given that massive opposition by patient groups, hospitals, and developers. Is the CMS leadership going to tackle that? Maybe they want to, you know, unleash that further. And last one, number three, is with respect to the congressional majority, all power is the Dems, especially those in purple states in the Senate. And to the degree that a policy, say, on drug pricing works for their voters and faces little Republican opposition at the base over there, you can be sure that, you know, progressives will make their voice heard for it to reach Chuck Schumer's desk.
Well, thanks, Ulrich. Going to be all for us today. So from all of us here at Certara Evidence and Access and the Market Access Radar podcast, if you want to learn more about the policies we discussed today, head over to our website, certara.com, and you can get a copy of our latest white paper, where we were asking 31 U.S. payers which are the big policies that they support. You'll be surprised at some of the results, and we actually have a customizable lunch and learn that goes along with that white paper, so if you're interested in that, please do reach out. With that, I'll say tune in again next time we're back. Hopefully the hiatus isn't quite as long. I think 3 years or something like that. So hopefully we'll be back
Yeah, we've aged a bit. We just got wiser. But anyways, yeah, happy to be back soon.
All right, thanks a lot.
You've listened to the Market Access Radar, your intelligence briefing brought to you by the team of Certara Evidence and Access. Find us online at certara.com/evidence-access.